The following is still a pandemic recording presented to you in Around Sound.
It was recorded with whatever was lying around.
Lady don't take no shit, insist on respect, assist, walk around like a womanish. She won't speak unless it's something worth saying, don't play. The girl take herself so seriously, people stare curiously. Got a natural way, her hips sway furiously. Yet luxurious thing, carries herself like the cutest, most prettiest thing you see this side of the bay.
Hey, this is Lady Don't Take No, your weekly roundup of all of the real and none of the fake. I'm your host, Alicia Garza. This show is pro-Black, pro-queer, proudly feminist, and pro-do-what-you-like. Every week, you're going to get the best of what goes on in my head, what we loving on, and what we hating on, what we might be, and what we ain't going to do. Politics, pop culture, police reform, we cover it all. We are recording from Oakland, California. Well, usually. This time we somewhere else, but mind your business. Oakland, California, which is the center of the known universe, where we are dealing with Rona and Reconstruction. It's a challenging time, a changing time, a time of transformation. It's all the things all the time nowadays, but we're going to help you understand the dynamics of this time every single week. So be sure to tune in, tell a friend, and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. We do it for the culture, so the pod is free 99, because we know that with a country in chaos, the least we could do is keep you from putting your money anywhere else than where it's needed. Our guest this week is an organizer, my friend, and the damn vice mayor of Phoenix, Arizona, District 8. He's the co-founder of Puente Human Rights Movement, an organization centered on improving the quality of life for Arizona's most marginalized communities. Our guest's organizing and movement building has been used as a model all over the nation to fight for migrant rights. I cannot wait to talk to him about his excellent, excellent work. So please welcome my homie, Carlos Garcia. What's up, Carlos? Hey!
What's up? Thank you for having me.
Excited. Oh, I'm so excited for you to be here. Okay, so we are in the throes of a second wave of the Rona. And this hoe brought her cousins, yo. I mean, really, it's just like, it's too much. So I got to ask you, because we are being asked once again to wrap it up and back it up. I got to ask you, what has your quarantine life been like? And have you developed any unique habits live and direct from Miss Rona?
Well, it's been a lot of work. It's turned into more work than I thought it was. Kept going to the city, and it's actually looked like a lot more family time. I never thought it would lead to spending more quality time with the kids, playing mm-hmm. basketball with my son. So yeah, a lot of things I forgot how much I love are happening, but obviously a lot of other things that I don't like, not being able to spend time with extended family and so on. But I've actually lost 80 pounds. Been riding the
come
bike.
Come on, Carlos. Come on.
I did the opposite of most people. I lost some weight. And so Rona times are definitely different times, but trying to find the best, like usual, right? We in Arizona, so whatever we could find in things, we'll try to get them done.
I noticed you was looking svelte when I seen you last. You know what I'm saying? You got some tips and secrets for the good health for the people who are listening right now?
Those happy hours were closed. No more happy hours. No, it's wanting to spend time with my 14-year-old. And I think, again, instead of giving him advice of what to do, it's doing it with him. Let's ride the bike together. Let's go play some basketball and eat better.
So let's jump in and let's talk organizing. There's been a lot of conflation between activism and organizing. And we sometimes use the word synonymously now, right? And I think you and I both came up in a trend that essentially made a pretty serious distinction between the two. Give us your sense. Like, is there a difference between activists and organizers? And what have you learned in your organizing career? Like, how did you even get into organizing?
So I got into organizing thinking about other people. And so a little bit about myself, I grew up undocumented in Arizona, obviously one of the worst places you want to grow up undocumented in.
Okay, tell the whole truth.
And so when I got my documents, it almost felt like I owed something to my family. I got my documents as a teenager when my stepdad was able to adopt me. And so there's always that sat on my shoulders. It's not about me. A lot of times, or a lot of the things I'm seeing now with activists versus organizers, is people often centering themselves, right? Not the broader community, not their families, not other folks that are impacted. When I first started organizing, 19 years old, I got thrown into a day labor corner. And I was told, improve the quality of life of these folks, whether you're going to do Know Your Rights training, whatever they need, figure it out. Figure out what they need, how you're going to help them, and go do it. And I had, I got thrown into the pool and I had to learn how to swim. And then as things came up, I had elders and people who'd done the work who were able to say, try this, try that. And so I feel that the organizing piece was literally that, being able to do an assessment of needs. And it's something that seems so simple, but I don't think it's happening that much. It's people hurrying up to try to be the impacted person. And I don't want to say that in a bad way, which I think all of our organizing, our agendas, our campaigns, our goals, our demands should be centered around the most impacted people. But I think people have conflated the two things of what an organizer does or an activist does. I also don't think there's anything wrong with activists. Some people are made to just be activists, to bring attention to something, rile things up, and get some things done there. But an organizer is going to look at it and try to have some long-term demands, some long-term goals, and try to figure out how to make systematic change, not just bring attention to something or rile people up for something.
Mm-hmm. I really appreciate you making those distinctions, because activism has become popularized, right? And these days, everybody wants to talk about activism. Everybody wants to do activism, but a lot of people don't know what it is. And certainly people don't know what organizing is. So I've asked a bunch of guests who have come on, who I know that are organizers, to help keep making it plain. Now, for a lot of organizers and people who are involved in social change work, because not everybody's an organizer, right? We spend our time fighting politicians, not trying to be them. Did you ever feel like that as an organizer? I mean, what made you want to become an elected official and run for office?
Yeah, I mean, even hearing you introduce me right now, and I've been in office for 2 years and been the vice mayor for this year, it still doesn't register. If you would have told me 10 years ago, 5 years ago, I would have told you were crazy. And so I think I may have three answers for this. I think the answer, like the moment answer, it actually comes through some of the dialogue. I mean, we were together in some spaces, and it might sound a little cheesy, but Stacey Abrams said, if we don't contend for these positions, we're conceding power by giving these positions up, but we're conceding to our own oppression. And that just stuck to me, right? And the fact that could have been said at different times in my life, and I would have just ignored it or said that was cool, but it actually came in a political moment where I didn't know what to do. I spent 10 years of my life figuring out every day how we're going to get rid of Sheriff Arpaio. You know, like literally every day, this dude had chain gangs, had people out in tents, was doing raids, deporting people. I spent every single moment of my life trying to get this person off of people's backs. And then 2016 comes, we finally get rid of him, and then Trump comes in. Mm. And then Trump literally comes to Phoenix to pardon Arpaio. Mm-hmm. And we did a protest, the cops, like they usually do. They shot us up with pepper balls. They attacked us. And we went to city council. We knew there was a moment where, with this person coming to the White House, that local governments needed to stand up. And right away, they failed. Mm-hmm. And so it was a moment of, whoa, we have to do this. We have to figure out how to get people in there. And the last thing, which is a more personal thing, and I don't think I've talked about it too much, it's really trying to use other parts of my brain and trying to figure out what my role was in the movement. I had become a person that brought coalitions together that took up a lot of space. And I actually wanted to see what it would look like for me to be removed from that and see what would happen. It's yet to be determined what would happen there. So I think it's a combination of all those things that made me want to take this jump and do what we're doing now, which is an experiment both on elections. And the last thing I'll say is our mutual friend Marisa and I remember a moment where we did civil disobedience in Arizona for the first time. And we were about to prep for massive civil disobedience because SB 1070 was coming in. And we said we had to be the first one to be arrested to understand the system, to be able to have other folks do it, right? This is a responsible thing to do as an organizer. Mm-hmm. And so then the movement, this question about playing in the electoral world was a similar moment for me where it was like, let me do this. Let me experiment with running a campaign, being myself, not cutting my hair, wearing t-shirts, saying the same shit I've been saying as an organizer. And then if we win, we win. And now it's the same experiment during governance.
I love this. And I was really, I hope this doesn't sound weird, but I was proud of you for stepping up in that way. And when you told me you were running, I was like, you would be fucking excellent. Like, that makes so much sense to me. And I was really proud to support your campaign. So tell me, Carlos, like, what are you learning then about what it takes to be effective as an elected official? Is it different than what it takes to be effective as like a grassroots organization?
So a lot of things do translate. And the thing that translates, if you've been an organizer for a long time, is being able to see opportunity and see when people are in pain. Mm. One of the quick stories I'll tell, when the pandemic started, someone came and donated 100 laptops to us. And I was like, yo, majority of public housing is District 8. Let's take these laptops to public housing. And we show up with these laptops, you know, and then they told us they might as well be paperweights. And I was like, whoa, are these broken? Like, what's up? And they were like, none of the public housing has Wi-Fi. Not that they don't have free Wi-Fi. They don't have the ability, even if they had money, to get Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. And so we had these youth, we had students now who were supposed to go to online schooling and didn't have access to internet. And so I felt dumb. I felt like, how is it that I'm an organizer in this city and I didn't know that all public housing didn't have access to this? And right, it's not police related, it's not immigration related, but it's something that's so messed up on so many levels. Anyways, fast forward, money came in from the feds. That's one of the first things we did. We were to get every school-age child a laptop and free Wi-Fi for 2 years. We show up to give the laptops away. A grandma comes up with her grandson and says, am I going to be able to see my doctor on here? And again, I felt dumb. I was like, yo, all these people can't go to the doctor. How are they expected to do these things that everybody else is doing online? Move forward, you know, every elderly person gets the same deal as the kids get. And so I say that all to say that I didn't know what I was getting myself into. It was a lot of the anger and frustration of the issues I was working on that the current council was not doing anything about. But now that I'm there, it's actually so much bigger than that. And it's this conversation about what role does government play in our lives? And also in the land of Goldwater, where we've allowed government to completely clean their hands of having any role or support in social welfare. And so I think that's the conversation or the thing I didn't know I was coming into.
You have like a really unique perspective that combines inside and outside strategies. Is there anything you can share about what organizers and activists don't see about elected officials that would be helpful to know from a strategy perspective?
Relationships matter.
I'm sorry. That is like so basic and profound. People forget relationships matter.
And as we shift, I mean, I'm the state, right? To someone, I am the state. And I also need to understand that in these 2 years, people have gotten into the movement, right? They didn't know Carlos from Puente. They didn't know Carlos getting arrested. They didn't know Carlos. They know Carlos, the council member, the now vice mayor of the fifth largest city, and expect their vice mayor or their council member to be like me. So I got to appreciate that, right? So it's not all shade when people are coming at me. I need to step back and understand that their expectation is now shifting, and that's a good thing. But what's hard is, for example, this last week, we had DOJ come into town to talk about that. We also had some investigations come out. And our office, myself, one of the officers that literally committed crimes, we asked for him to be fired. The police union comes out, does a video and says, council members should not ask for someone to be fired, that's city staff. Therefore, he should resign or he should be taken out of office. On the other hand, you have some movement folks, some activist folks saying, Carlos didn't ask for the chief to be fired. He should resign and leave, right? And so it's that relationship. If I was able to have conversations with everybody, which is another thing that's not possible, or it's not in the same level now, especially with other folks coming in. But if we would be able to have conversations, be able to understand each other at a different level, or the purpose of why someone like myself is in here, I think the conversation, the tactics, everything could and should be different.
Mm-hmm. You know, I really want to appreciate what you're saying here, because one thing that I think is helpful as a lesson is when we get people elected to positions of power, yes, we should absolutely hold you accountable, my G, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we should also own you, meaning you're ours, right? So we got your back, and we're going to make sure you do exactly what it is that we need you to be doing. And I think sometimes, and I've seen this not just in Phoenix, I've seen it in a bunch of places, where it's like we do a lot of work to get people elected, and then we just throw rocks at them. It's like so bizarre. Like the whole point is to get somebody to move your strategy so you can change the rules that have been rigged. And if you have somebody in a position of power, and we actually need multiple peoples, right? So we should also always be thinking about who else are we going to put in there? Because we actually want to have the majority in a voting body so that we can move an agenda. But I digress. But when we have somebody who's willing to do those things, it's really important that they become a part of our strategy, and that the strategy is not just about throwing rocks at the castle. And I think we forget that sometimes. I remember there was a progressive majority in San Francisco on the board of supervisors. And, you know, we had a different working relationship with folks because all those folks came out of our organizations. But we weren't always thinking strategically about what it was that we were trying to get them to move overall, right? And so when they did good things, a lot of times they were doing good stuff because they knew what they were supposed to be doing, but not because we were driving stuff, right? And then when they were a little bit off, it was like, you're excommunicated. So I'm really appreciating the things that you're saying here. Let me ask you this, because you brought it up. I mean, we learned a couple of weeks ago that the Justice Department is opening an investigation into the Phoenix Police Department, particularly as it's related to practices surrounding its treatment of protesters, people with disabilities, and more. We talked about this a little bit on the podcast in a weekly roundup a few weeks ago, but I'm hoping you can give us some inside insight as to what's happening and why we should be paying attention to it.
So first of all, this is Phoenix, Arizona, right? I talked about Arpaio earlier. This is Goldwater land. This is a different place than some of the other places. So DOJ coming may mean something or may not. It's going to mean what organizers or what we do with it. We're going to have to give it meaning. They're going to come and do their investigation and probably going to tell us what we already know, what some of these investigations came out. They're mocking up charges, arresting protesters. They were giving people gang charges as ACAB. They were calling ACAB a gang and giving folks charges. We're obviously going to see all that. But there's a couple things that are happening. One is dealing with people without shelter and taking their belongings. And the other one is the mental health piece. They're expanding beyond, obviously, yes, 2 years ago, we're the deadliest police force in the country, use of force is out of hand, all those typical things. But I am very interested in them looking at other cultures and practices that the city does that is not just the, you know, someone getting shot. Obviously, those are really important, but we're actually going to be able to get to see things and hopefully be able to use them in other places. And I think that's where we're also disconnected. DOJ has gone into Ferguson, Baltimore, all these other places. And I'm a little embarrassed to say, I don't know what came out of that. And I haven't talked either to the council folks there or to people on the ground there or movement to see what came out of it. And so I think that next level of sophistication to be able to use it, if there's a victory that came out of the Ferguson or Baltimore or wherever the DOJ's been, or a practice that they did that they were able to use this investigation to actually change conditions on the ground, we need to be sharing that. And that's not happening. And maybe I'm the one that's not connected, but that's, I think, what we do with these investigations, both in participating in it, but what we do after, I think is going to be the key.
What are some of the biggest barriers to police reform in Arizona and in Phoenix specifically? I mean, I think what I like about what you just said about the Justice Department is that, you know, a lot of people don't realize that most of what happens with policing is actually controlled at a state level and at a county or a municipal level. The feds really provide oversight and provide funding, but so much of the decision-making is really local. So talk to us a little bit about what some of the barriers are to police reform. I know this is a big issue that you've been working on, specifically in Phoenix.
People are afraid. And this goes back to one of the earlier questions about lessons learned. Our ordinances, our budgets, our bureaucracy, our entire 15,000 people that work at the city of Phoenix, were put forth by white men 50 and 60 years ago, white straight men. And we haven't shifted. We have not had the imagination to ask ourselves, if we were to start City of Phoenix over today or any city, how would we start it? Where would we spend our money? And this goes to defund. I think defunding the police departments is one of the key thing we have to do. Obviously, the last two budget votes, I've been the only one to vote or for that or demand that. But I think in order to get to that place, we need to keep talking about it, and we need people to understand that the way we build things is the problem, right? The way these institutions were built, those folks that are in leadership now, either as department directors or city managers, have been on the job for 20 or 30 years. And when they got brought in, what their council was asking for is very different than the council that is present now, and hopefully the council that's going to be present in 20 years, which is hopefully going to be very, very different, more progressive, whatever you want to call it. And so I think the barriers are, you know, the center folks, the liberal folks, the same thing that happens everywhere. And so, again, it's how do we use the tools that we have, considering myself as a tool, this DOJ investigation as a tool, how do we use that to move forward an agenda of framing and eventually our organizing to get the things we want, which is invest in the things that we know is what brings us safety, which is the things our people need, you know, the basics, the essentials.
Carlos, what are your top priorities on the city council? I know you've been really a leader in this conversation around policing. You have certainly done a ton of work in your 2 years. So what does the future look like for you? What are your top priorities right now?
When we came in, you know, I was speaking that movement language that we all like to speak or writing grant reports or post on social media. Mm-hmm. And people at the city would look at me like I was speaking another language. So a lot of our work early on in these last 2 years, for example, I want to make an argument that this policing issue is a public health issue. Guess what? The fifth largest city in the country does not have a public health department, right? And so there's no way I can make an argument around public health for multitude of things, obviously during the pandemic, if we don't have a department. We try to talk about climate, we don't have a climate office. We try to talk about equity, there's nothing there. And so again, reminding people, this is Phoenix, Arizona. So this last year, we passed some of those things. We got an equity office, we got some Office of Accountability and Transparency, a public health consultant. So a lot of our time has been consumed kind of setting down some of the groundwork. And so first of all, I think what's coming up is implementing those, making sure that those are rooted and are frames that we can use in the future or others can use in the future. Obviously continuing the policing work, but I think housing, it all comes back to housing. I think a lot of the issues we see are leading us that way. Obviously the eviction moratorium has been pushed back a little bit, but in Phoenix, like in the rest of the country, people without shelter is a crisis, it's a pandemic, and we need to figure that out. Again, thinking as an organizer, we can't get someone to come testify, come to a protest, file a lawsuit, figure out how we're going to fight back and change the system if they don't have a place to live. That's probably not the answer I would have given you 2 years ago, but that's where it's at right now. And it's really meeting people's needs.
And just like that, it's time for our weekly roundup of all the things Lady just ain't gonna do this week. Number one, government in Afghanistan collapses. So this week's news cycle was dominated by the news that as President Biden was drawing down the number of U.S. troops in Afghanistan after 20 years of endless war, the Taliban moved in, took control of the region, and the government collapsed, with the president of Afghanistan going immediately and directly into exile. The background that you need to know to best understand all this, well, basically, this is what happens with U.S. foreign policy. It's going to be a mess because our policy ain't never for nobody except us. For example, since at least 1979, the United States has been funding problematic forces to fight communism and not worrying about the destruction they leave in their wake. The Soviet Union was an occupying force in Afghanistan. The United States was terrified about the spread of communism and thus was funding rebel forces to defeat it, putting money and guns into the hands of people who were ready to rumble and not really giving a fuck about what they were ready to rumble about. When the Soviet occupation ended in 1989, and then there was fighting amongst various factions in the region, most of the fighting had to do with power struggles amongst various internal factions, but here's the shit you need to know. The Taliban been banging on motherfuckers since 1994, at least. And while at first some may have celebrated them as heroes for ending the fighting that was internal to the country, the Taliban then turned around and raised up on the people they claimed they were trying to help. Sound familiar? Then the Taliban came and got gully on the U.S., flying planes through the Twin Towers in New York City on September 11th, 2001. And this ushered in a new era of hating on people from that region, counterterrorism operations, and trillions of dollars spent on a war that only Congresswoman Barbara Lee, who speaks for me, was courageous enough to reject. So, this is a short and pithy history that actually has much more details and much more nuance, but suffice it to say, it's more complicated than the Afghani president abandoning his post. The U.S. attempted to set up a puppet government in a country where people have been subject to violence and war for at least the last 100 years, while also having contributed to funding the violence and the forces advancing violence that people are so desperately trying to get away from. Basically, it's playing all sides of the chessboard, and that is almost certain to stir up some shit and create a complete mess. Now, over the next few weeks and even months, you're going to hear a lot that amounts to a bunch of propaganda about what our country is actually doing in Afghanistan. But it's important to remember that the role of the United States is always more complicated than we claim. There's no such thing as good guys and bad guys here. In essence, the last 100 years of this country has been characterized by power grabs and factionalism. And the people caught in the middle are the people who merely want to live their lives without war and without the United States. So don't think for one second that the question here is whether or not you support the Taliban. The real question here is, why are the main characteristics of U.S. foreign policy all about destabilizing governments, funding a range of forces that ain't no good, and building governments that support the United States, but not the interests of the people who live there? And What is going to happen to all the people there who just want to live safe and dignified lives? Who's responsible for that? Next thing Lady ain't gonna do this week is a massive earthquake in Haiti. Now, Lady's heart is absolutely broken at the devastation that we're seeing in Haiti right now. A few weeks ago, we talked about the political situation in Haiti, and now we're talking about a massive earthquake that thus far has claimed the lives of more than 2,000 people, with more than 12,000 people injured and 330 people missing. And on top of that, Haiti was hit by Tropical Storm Grace this week, making it difficult to do relief missions at all. Landslides, broken infrastructure, and political unrest is making it difficult to get relief to people, and tensions are running high. There aren't enough doctors to perform urgent surgeries that are needed, and there isn't enough fuel or supplies to do what needs to be done. Now, at least 24 healthcare facilities were destroyed by the earthquake. Honestly, I'm praying for Haiti, and check out our socials for more information on relief efforts that you can donate to. And let's work to make sure Haiti can catch a fucking break, because it's really heartbreaking what this country is going through. And it's even more heartbreaking that our foreign policy is a part of that. Other things Lady ain't gonna do this week, but I'm finna do it when it's my turn. Booster shots, because the Rona done brought her cousin's child. Well, it's official that the Biden administration is now recommending booster shots to strengthen our protection against the Rona. And those boosters are going to be available beginning September 20th. Now, assuming approval from the FDA and the CDC, the boosters will be available to those who are 18 or older who are already fully vaccinated. And priority is going to be given to healthcare workers and those who are already vulnerable, like seniors and immunocompromised people. Boosters are relatively normal with vaccines. It's rarely a one-and-done situation, but here's the part that Lady wants to emphasize here. The information rollout on this vaccine has been a complete fucking shitshow. Now, according to Yahoo News, this vaccine was always going to have to be a three-shot combo, but for expediency's sake, the rollout focused on having people get the two shots needed for relief. Now, unfortunately, no one seems to have grasped that when you withhold information, it allows for conspiracy theories to slip in, and you get people in lab coats on YouTube selling snake oil. That's why we got people in our families who will take Herbalife and swear by the shit, but won't get the fucking Rona regimen. Now, as always, the vaccine will be free, regardless of immigration status or whether or not you have health insurance, and no ID will be required from those who are eligible and want to receive the shots. And honestly, folks, I'm on some shit right now where I'm feeling like if you're not getting vaccinated, you're literally walking into oncoming traffic and saying you're gonna give it to God. And that just don't make no sense. Let's move to the things that Lady does love this week. Oh, Jesus. Okay. Number one, California Attorney General Rob Bonta announces a review of the Oscar Grant case. Now, this week, California Attorney General Rob Bonta announced that his office will perform an independent review of the Oscar Grant case. You will remember that Oscar Grant was murdered in the early morning hours of New Year's Day in 2009 by BART police officers. Johannes Messerly, who was one of those officers, claimed he believed that he was reaching for his taser when he shot Oscar on the BART platform. The attorney general will review the case to see if there is sufficient evidence that another officer, Anthony Peroni, is also liable for Oscar's death. Now, Lady thinks this is a really important step. District Attorney Nancy O'Malley refused to reopen the case, but that was not surprising given she's not exactly what you call rigorous about holding police accountable. Even in a jurisdiction that pays out more money to families in civil lawsuits involving police conduct than almost any other major U.S. city. I think this was a bold move by the Attorney General, and we love to see it. It's not the only step, but it's an important one, and it matters that this gets the review it deserves. Now, I'm sure the Attorney General is getting all kinds of hate messages from the police associations. So, if you get a minute, call the AG's office and thank them for their courage. And tell them to keep putting one foot in front of the other so that Oscar's family can finally get some resolution. You can give them a call at 415-703-5500. Again, 415-703-5500. Other things Lady loves this week, Real Housewives of Salt Lake City is back September 12th. Now, honey, when I tell you I am all the way here for the upcoming season of Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, I know. It was getting a little stale there at the end, but just because, to be honest, they're giving me a lot of white ladies who are just discovering, but also not really caring about the fact that they're white. But the loveliness of the drama in this franchise is that you get to see the awakening and the aftermath without having to be a recipient of it. Yes, indeed. It is much more palatable when somebody else is dealing with it, and it ain't me watching Karen with a blank stare as she discovers racism. Now, here's to hoping they can do a little more character development on this season and a little less of Meredith's son, who gives me all the mean girl vibes that we should really just say goodbye to. And speaking of Real Housewives, the Beverly Hills franchise is just getting weird, man. I mean, this whole thing with Erica Girardi and her husband is just, it's really sad. And now apparently he's been diagnosed with some neurological disorder and early Alzheimer's. I mean, I can't tell from watching it if she was in on the shit or not, but my sense is that she wasn't in on it. She was just spending his money and living in a loveless marriage because she wanted that lifestyle. Anyhow, this just goes to show you. You think someone is living the glamorous life, and really, you're judging them by what they put on the gram. Never forget that the gram is not real life. It's curated, child. I curate my own Instagram. You think I'm throwing stuff on there that doesn't look amazing? I mean, you think I would put a picture up of that time I had an allergic reaction to some shit and my face swelled up so bad that I look like I've been punched 17 times, only without any bruises? I mean, come on, man. Hell nah. And the thing about celebrity culture is just that. People are paid to make you want their life. But 90% of the time, you really don't want that shit. You just don't know it. Moving on, other things Lady loves this week is McDonald's French fries. Now, look, I hate to promote fast food of any type, so please don't take this as a paid ad, because it's not, honey. I do have to say, though, there really is nothing better than McDonald's French fries. They're literally my comfort food, my muse, my late night absorb this alcohol, please, and thank you snack. Always coming through in the clutch. And yes, only McDonald's fries. We could go on and on and on, but we're out of time. So I want to ask you if you can tell the people who are listening right now how they can follow you on the socials.
We'll send you all the socials. District 8, Phoenix District 8 on all the socials. And we'll definitely, you know, send it out to folks. But yeah, just follow what's happening in Phoenix overall. Going into campaign mode next year, and so we'll be sending some support requests out there to the country and around Arizona to help us out.
Okay, let's do it. Thank you so much, Carlos. That's it for Lady Don't Take No, but I'll be back here every single Friday morning to accompany you where there's a chance you might be commuting again. We appreciate you joining us, and please, let's keep the conversation going. Tell us what you like, tell us what's on your mind, and tell us what you ain't gonna take no more of. On Twitter, we're at Lady Take. On Insta, we're at Lady Don't Take No Pod. We are also on Facebook at Lady Don't Take No Podcast by Alicia Garza. We post ways to do something about things you hear on this show all over our social media. So if we got you amped up today, check out the socials to find out how you can take action. And let's give a special shout out to Jahari Farrar for making sure the people get what they need from our socials. We appreciate you. Please subscribe and write us a review and let the people know what you've heard here today. Our incredible producer is Phil Circus. Our fantastic theme is by Lateryx. And this pod is supported by the Black Futures Lab. Oh, and I'm your host, Alicia Garza. Remember, nothing soaks up that alcohol like McDonald's French fries. Always read between the lines when it comes to U.S. foreign policy. Oscar Grant deserves justice even 9 years later. And get the vaccine, y'all. If not for your own sake, for the rest of ours. Look, we've been through so much already, y'all. And to think that getting out of it is in our hands and we refuse to do so because we're just more committed to a fuck around and find out mentality is just, it's counterproductive. That's right. I said it because lady don't take no.
Lady don't take no shit. Insist on respect the sister. Walk around like a woman. Yeah. She won't speak unless it's something worse. Singing don't play. The girl take herself so serious. People stare curious. Got a natural way. Her hips sway furious.
Love y'all.